What is this shift?
I feel like that the creative activity brings forward for me, you know, what we were just talking about. In order to fully be in that creative process and fully show up as I was meant to and my true self, I need to be immersed in me. I need to cut out the noise, as we said, and just kind of immerse myself in me and whatever the project is that I'm working on at the time. And also just kind of recognize that I am a channel that is flowing this energy through me, this creative energy. I'm tapping into something, you know, not necessarily local in my brain.
Or la cabeza.
Yeah, and honor that and respect that process.
Oh, what?
We had the satisfactory and now we got...
It's very interesting, the image, because I just went to the gynecologist yesterday. All right. Main card, magician. Sarasvati, express yourself through creative activities, is what it says. The arts. And then you've got this magician drawing. Looks like art expressing herself.
Yeah.
Perfect.
And I also see grounded. Grounded in spirit and in earth, in physical. And receiving. Yeah.
Yeah. I get the, just, you know, what I've been getting for myself, like recently about my art and expressing myself. It's like you don't need it to be good. You just need it to exist and just start doodling. This totally looks like, you know, something you would doodle on with your fingers on, what are those, the iPads or tablet or something like that. Some sort of device that's already got the rainbow set as the background underneath, and you just carve out the drawing.
It takes a fair amount of vulnerability in art, in creating, becoming a magician. You know, you have to be honest with yourself. You have to be able to dive deep and let whatever comes out just come out. You know, you kind of have to be judgment-free of whatever's coming out of you.
You got a few minutes, Stephen. Any final thoughts?
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. And to build kind of on what Elias was saying, I feel the history, the ritual, kind of what's being brought into this picture as like the artist and the magician, like see all the elements here, you know, like I picture the wind blowing through her hair and she's receiving the rain, you know, almost as if she's calling it from the sky, you know, and yet she's totally grounded on the earth with the fire at her feet. And so, yeah, I just see like all aspects represented here, you know, the physical, the mental, the spiritual, and then the harmony of coming together and being created in woman.
I love that the fingertips are blue as well, like literally calling in the rain.
Receiving, yeah.
Yeah. The fire below is blue as well. Not that I forgot you're colorblind, huh?
Yeah, I assumed it was white. Now that you say that, I can see a blue tinge to it. But yeah, I just assumed the flame was white.
Welcome to Shift Hit the Fan. Steven has to go, but we wanted to...
I was here for a moment.
I was here for a little bit. I wanted to get at least a little bit of an intro while you're here so that people are like, wait. I'll put this in at the beginning. Yeah.
Right. Well, I am glad I was able to check in for a little bit. And much love to you guys.
And I've got your cards for the day.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sending y'all some energy for the rest of the chat.
All right. Awesome. Thanks.
All right.
We'll see
you. Thank you.
Yeah, I feel like the arts, Sarasvati and the magician are two solid cards there.
Yeah. With the fingertips, what came to mind is like for a while, I don't know how long, maybe a month, maybe a little bit more, I've been thinking, like I've been waking up thinking of the song called Fingertips. And I couldn't remember at first who was the singer where I'd heard that. Interesting that I keep thinking of fingertips. And I don't know if it's, you know, because I have felt like a little bit of pain or numbness and all that. Maybe healing my fingertips, maybe like an association to the magic, especially since her fingertips are different color. Maybe it is about healing my fingertips as sort of like symbolic of my relationship to my own medicine. So it's like the things that I think need healing are both in these cards, the art and the magic.
Have you heard of homunculus?
Yeah.
Image?
I've heard of it.
It's like the areas of the body that have the most sensation in them. So they've aggrandized those areas. So like your hand and your tongue and your lips and genitals, eyes. So these areas where the most sensation is found. So I was thinking of your fingertips and like, where's your best creativity going to come from? It's in those areas where you have the most sensation, where you can create the most.
Probably what makes like being on devices not so good, you know. The middle finger hurt. Only the middle finger on my left hand was hurting. And I was like, I wonder why. Is it hurt because it's never flipped anybody off? Yeah. Like, I've flipped people off with the right hand, but never, never the left. It doesn't get to be fully self-expressed. It doesn't get to have the full spectrum of everything else. Bringing attention to those parts of us that are the most sensitive, like you said. I had not heard of the homunculus in those terms.
And being like creative?
Yeah, well, like what you had said.
It's interesting that like the genitals have a big portion of it as well. And like, how do we create with that? Like we have so much creation with it. Like how much of our art is centered around the genitals, and how much creation power do we have in just creating children? And I know with like myself, like I've used it for like an outlet of creative powers. Like I'm not using my creative powers as much. And so that ends up being the way that it comes out, through sexual activity.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've read Think and Grow Rich. They have an entire chapter on sexual energy and what it is, what it means for your creativity, for your power, for your self-esteem, for everything. If you master your sexual energy, if you elevate it, you raise it. And I think it was sort of taboo when the book initially came out because of religions and things like that, not wanting people to, what was I saying? Something about the genitals, sexual energy, which, you know, I remember when I was doing medicine, some of the communication that I was getting about my downstairs, my cave, my woman cave, it was like there was supposed to be a lot of attention on the little piece, the little head. And I wondered, it's like, is that why mushrooms are shaped the way that they are?
I do have the penis endy mushroom.
Because that's what the clit, I can't remember the word. It's mine. It's the same shape. So I don't know if it was just bringing my attention to the mushroom part of it, or the head part of it, or, but there's a lot of wisdom in that. And I remember reading something like that, like about the power of the creativity through that, more than just being able to give birth or plant a seed. It's artistic and whatever it is, even inspiration for how you're going to run a meeting or cook a meal or whatever. I think there's a lot of links to the power of that, the sexual energy, the sexual organs. And it feels like it's one of those things where people who want you to not know your power, they're going to tell you everything that's the most powerful, that's the stuff that's bad for you, right? You got to not pay attention to it. You got to, you know, that's bad and wrong. So we've got to question everything that we're being taught is bad, because that's a lot of times where our power is.
Well, I think it's not so much they're telling us to avoid it. I think it's to not pay attention to it as much. I think it's a misunderstanding of what the sacred nature of it was, of what the power that it holds. They're trying to define that respect for it, but in doing so, they've created a taboo around it. Of, don't go there. Don't talk about it. Don't mention it. And I think that is just kind of the misunderstanding that's been created around it, is instead of harnessing the energy, you know, I've heard stories of just, oh wow, I found this woman really attractive, and instead of like letting that build some sort of tension in me, I just kept that energy and I was able to do something different with it later on. And I think that's the type of respect that we can find for it, is can we tame our own impulses or drive towards a sexual activity or towards a feeling, and instead of like feeling some sort of conflict in ourselves about it or trying to release the conflict, we can harness that energy, move it through our body and use it in these beautiful creative ways. And I think even with sexual activity, there's some parts of it where, yeah, abstaining from it can help create chemicals for other creative pieces of our life. But also, if you don't create the conflict around the sexual activity and you really allow yourself to be in that, in the senses, and I think this is where Tantra really comes into play, where you're training yourself to be with the senses of sexual activity. It's a very meditative sexual practice. And that in those cases, you become very sensitive to the energy, you become sensitive to your body. It's not just a go hard, go, you know, get this energy out of me. I need to have this dopamine, or I need to have this interaction to feel a certain way. It's really harnessing that energy, being one with it, being more sensitive and aware of what is happening in your body. And the more I learn, the more it's like, the more aware I can be, the more power I have, the more ability I have, the more control or choice that I seem to have in life.
I think of the geniuses that who have been like celibate their entire lives because they don't want to lose their genius. But I wonder if the genius is more because they believe that by doing a certain thing, it doesn't matter what the thing is, that that's where the genius is. It's the belief. It's the knowing that this is the trick that's going to help me be genius. Or is it the actual physical aspect of it? And, you know, and that's hard to like to actually say yes or no. It's actually this thing, because there's so many things that just keep getting like debunked and like, no, actually what's really happening, you know, as science progresses, there's people do more studies. They're like, yep, nope, it's actually this is the reason why. Like they've been doing that with near-death experiences, right? That it's actually a chemical in your brain that gives its last hurrah, essentially, of whatever it is, the belief system that you're more susceptible to, that's the experience you're going to have in the afterlife, right? But it's really your brain doing the thing, right? And you have like people whose lives are changed entirely because they believe that that experience was actually real. Because that's how powerful the brain is. Like, it can trick you into anything. So I'm more likely to believe, and maybe that's why I don't remember what happens when I'm dead. And then my last two deaths have been computer deaths. So it's like after learning that, am I going to be able to have like one of those spiritual deaths like people have? Or do I already know something that's not going to allow for that anymore? Right. So I just wonder, is that I'm just going to keep questioning everything. Keep the mystery in life. Maybe not settle for that truth. Maybe that's what's helping me get that imaginal awakening that I'm looking for, right?
And I think that's where I've come to in life, is like, I don't know. I don't even know that I can trust my own body isn't creating some illusion for me, for what I'm experiencing. Like, how do I know that I'm not in the matrix and some little ball that's being fed some algorithm that, you know, I don't know any of that. And there's no way for me to prove it. And there's no way, like, science has so much beautiful evidence to it. And I love science, but at the same time, I don't know. Like, I have to have faith in science to be able to believe that any of those things are true. It's that I have to have faith in somebody else's word to just know that. And I think that's the beauty behind faith and religion, is that we all have faith. It just depends on where we're putting our faith. Where are we looking to? What are we trusting? And there can always be questions about it. And that's where I've kind of come to in life, is I trust. Like, I have to just trust. But at the same time, I'm not grasping onto that trust with all of my life, just to defend it, to, you know, whatever it is, like, because I don't know. Like, why am I going to defend something that I have no idea is true? Like, I can tell you that I've had an experience, I can tell you about my experience, but I can't, there's no purpose in me defending experiences that I haven't had, or all sorts of whatever concepts that I haven't created for myself in my life.
I think of I used to be one of those people too that I would look at kids and their natural reaction to seeing an image or a statue of Jesus and how they just know how to worship and all this stuff and how people react, and they're like, they just know, they know, that's how you know that's the truth. But then I look at all of these things that I've inherited of my dad, who's not religious at all, right? Things that, like, this is something that I've actually been working through, is like, how do I become my own person when I'm like, you know, almost identical to my dad in behavior, right? And all this stuff. And it's not something that I learned by watching him. He wasn't around a lot. He was working a lot. So it's like, it would be my mom, if anything, that I should be like, if it was from observed behavior. But there are a lot of things that we just do naturally because that's what's wired into our cells, into our programming, because we have two parents, because we've been dispersed. It's not 50-50. It's like what they say, it's like a deck of cards, right? Each parent brings their deck of cards, they shuffle it, they're going to give you their hand, whatever hand, and it's not going to be equal amongst all of your siblings. So they're all going to have different personalities, which is why I ended up with no anxiety and the rest of them did somehow, except maybe my baby brother. I don't know. It's just the hand that you were dealt, your wiring, you just, it's not necessarily intuition, but it's programming. So, and that's what gives us what we're more inclined to believe. Like how we interpret scriptures or holy texts or whatever it is, it's already pre-programmed. And it's like, what are you gonna do to, I don't know, maybe question, maybe to I guess dismantle, to break, to become your own person, to individuate. And I guess that's the purpose of alchemy, is to see what actually is coming from you or is coming through you, or what's just pre-programmed and you're just trying to be a slightly better version of your parents.
Yeah, so the thought that I had behind it, we have all this programming. Like epigenetics is a huge part of our programming. We are given epigenetics. Yeah, we're given genes from our parents. But how are those genes expressed? And our mother's womb gives us a ton of those epigenetics, like from the things that she's eating, from, I don't know, whatever it is, the emotions that are going on within her. And on top of that, we affect her epigenetics. We affect how she's expressing her genes. And so in a lot of ways, I think our soul has its own expression to it, its own identity, its own function. And that's something that my friend and I talk about a lot, is this idea of function. What is our function in life? Like a mathematical function, you plug something in and you get something out of it. You have all these, this input, all this sensation that's coming through us, this experience. And I think the experience that we have is kind of the output, not necessarily how we're acting, but what is the experience that we're directly having? And a lot of that comes from the programming, from the just being in a human body and how we were raised and the conditioned behavior within us. But then, like you're saying, there's that choice. There's that ability to choose, to understand, to be aware of that programming, to be aware of the programming that came from our parents, that came from society, culture, all these different areas. And can we become aware of it, and can we start to choose something different? And sometimes we can't. And I think sometimes the greatest choice is just relaxing and being okay with being in inside of the programming and just recognizing this is just where I'm at right now. And that can change and that can bend and move. And a lot of, like even yesterday, I was thinking of various choices that I was making in life. And I'm like, I don't know that there is a right or wrong choice towards this. There's just choice. There's just me making a choice. And maybe my choice has been determined based off of past choices or the programming from my parents or from the programming from society and the culture that we're living in. But I made a choice, and now I just get to experience that choice. What's that going to bring? And I get to go on from there. And if I don't like it, then maybe I make a different choice. Or if I don't like the conditioned behavior that comes, that's protecting me, can I give it enough awareness and find the ability to relax enough so I can say, I don't want that conditioned behavior in mm-hmm. the future. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where, like, we get back to this magician card where she's naked. And just that vulnerability, like can we be vulnerable with ourselves? Can we strip ourselves bare and be able to see that programming, whether that's the programming from our own choices or of like how we decided to protect ourselves from the world, from our own emotions? Or can we just be vulnerable with the world and say, yeah, this is who I am. And this is what I am. I'm just human. And that's a big scary thing that can come with consequences. But at the same time, that vulnerable nakedness, that returning to the Garden of Eden, stripping the protection off, that's a huge thing to be able to do.
Something I find that helps is, you know, our friend Twitchy Witch that we've mentioned does Jungian dream readings. And that's actually what got me on this little investigation into where my self-worth comes from, and it coming from my dad. And so I definitely recommend Twitchy's dream reading, because I've had a few and they're always life-changing. And knowing, like, I've been trying to heal dad stuff for a while since my mom passed away, because I suddenly noticed daddy issues, right? Because having my mom around, it was like, she acted almost like a shield for dad. And now we just have dad in his crude form. So we just notice things about him that, like, oh, this has been a thing all along, but like it's suddenly an issue or something, right? So it's like, why do I have these issues if I'm the same person? Like, I do this too. Why do I feel bad about doing that thing suddenly, like where before? And so this dream that I had was essentially like we were shopping, because this is another dream that she was reading about being at a grocery store, right? I said, okay, well, what if you're just at the checkout? And like, I don't remember actually being in the rest of the grocery store. I'm just trying to make some change. For some reason, I have to pay the change. But my dad's been pushing. I'm like in the basket of the shopping cart. My dad's been pushing me around the entire time. And then she says that, well, that just means that your self-worth is, if your dad holds the key to your self-worth. And I was like, dang it. So it's like now I have the context for all of these upsets, because I've given it away. I've given away my power to that. And I feel like there's so many things that I just do automatically, that just like I can't seem to shake off. They just come through me. They're not like of me. So it's like now I'm dealing with, okay, well, you know, he's perfect the way he is. I don't have to change it. There's not a problem with it. I actually, you know, love these things. So I came up with a list of all these things that I love about my dad so that I can identify where my dad is and where like my dad ends and I begin, right, to sort of learn to unlearn all of the things that I don't actually have to be like, and whether or not like they're actually a problem, or is it just because they're so automatic within me, and then I just and I get this like ick after I say them or after I do them. So it's like bringing that clarity to that. But I also thought, like, Jesus came in. Did he actually have the freedom to be himself, or was he just here to be his dad and spread his dad's message? So it gave me also a new perspective on something too, you know, because I love Jesus. I'm talking about Jesus all the time. Like, that's the reason I started following Twitchy Witch, as she was talking about Jesus. And so it's like I pay attention to the relationship of Jesus and how he's interpreted and how we're supposed to. It's like wanting to have Like it says in the Bible, one, it's having the ears that hear and the eyes that see. So I want to try on everything. Is this right? You know, and will I feel it if it is? And yeah, I think I took a side quest on how I ended up starting to dismantle that and sort of detach from, or unidentify, that's the word I was looking for, unidentify from the things. So it's like learning to, I started the next night after that, or two nights after, I had a dream about Jesus flying, like around, like Goku, in over a forest in Las Vegas. So I know I did something to sort of set Jesus free. It's like, I get these confirmations or these feelings, like, it's almost as if Jesus is saying, like, yeah, this is the thing, right? But it could just be my own thinking I'm special or something. I don't know.
I really liked your side tangent, because it was something that I was kind of mentioning it just now too. But I was thinking back to our conversations of being an earth keeper, and I was thinking of like this idea of being stewards over the earth and needing to keep the earth and keep our body. And I think that we have this idea we have these ideals in our life of what we should and shouldn't do, what we should be and what we should not be. And a lot of it comes from our parents and our upbringing. And again, it comes back to our own individual function. Maybe we're not meant to be an earth keeper directly. For me, I don't feel any call to have any part with politics. Like, it just does not resonate with me. And I have zero, like, I'll pay attention every so often, but it just, for me, it's not part of my function. And I'm okay with that. But that doesn't mean that that's right for everybody. Like, for a lot of people, politics is a really important thing. And I think that's coming back to the idea of Jesus. Like, we have that narrative in our Christian religions of, I'm trying to be like Jesus. Like, he's the one to follow. He's the perfect ideal. But then again, who are we? Who am I? I'm not Jesus. Jesus might be a part of me in the way that I've created the concepts inside my mind. I'm not Jesus. He had his own function. He had a specific role that he was fulfilling in life. And so coming back to alchemy, and especially Jungian psychology, that idea of individuation, what I would say is the process of becoming an indivisible, or becoming your own individual. Who are you in your own singularity of a person, in your own existence? And yeah, that might be part of your dad, part of your mom, part of your, like, all of these different experiences that have come from you. It might be part of the past life experiences. It can be all of that. But then who are you choosing to be? What function are you choosing to play at this moment? And that doesn't have to be set in stone. I think we can choose that function. We can play with it. We can bend it. We can experience it differently. And I think there's so much beauty behind that of, you don't have to be stuck. You can, there's no one ideal, in my opinion. I think that there's so much possibility that of what you can be and what you want to be.
Magician. The magician and the arts. The arts. I think the magician is the artist. You get to create who you are moment by moment, and you're never stuck with who you turn out to be. That's one of the quotes that I learned in Landmark, one of my seminars, and it stuck with me. You're never stuck with who you turned out to be. And you're not who you think you are. The who you think you are is not really who you are.
Well, it's the way that I see ego. Like, you have an ego death. So you killed some part of yourself. Like, you might have, like, you might feel like you've killed off some, like, an entire self and you're egoless, but that's never true. You've just transitioned to a different form, a different sense of self, a different sense of being, of existing. And all of those things that were in the past, they're still a part of you. And you're just choosing to be a different self, a different personality, a different experience than what you were. You've broken some form of conditioning, and now you're choosing a different feeling. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the beauty of it. It's like, who you are is not what you need to be. Or, like, I think there's an Alan Watts quote that says, who you are now is not who you need to. You're not obligated to be who you are now. 5 minutes from now, you can be somebody completely different. I'm botching that completely, but wait, 5 minutes from now, you can be a different person, and that's okay.
I love that. That just reminded me of a conversation that's been coming up amongst friends, that we don't get to see people in their messy process. We get to see people just regurgitating quotes, all of these old, the old wisdom, the old, you know, whatever it is that's out there, that's motivational stuff, the inspiring stuff, the stuff, the spiritual stuff, you know, so people get their moment when they think of this quote, or when they associate it to whatever they're going through, they have that moment of that, the dopamine of feeling good, of feeling, because, you know, for the most part, so many of us are out there thinking we're not good enough, we're not smart enough, or, you know, we're not the ones that should be having a platform or whatever it is. We don't think we're enough. And so when you have a moment of like, where you feel like, I just, you know, this thought, and then it's the same thought that we've been putting out there, like, even those thoughts have evolved over time, people get clarity around it, people get like a different understanding, they'll create an entire course on what they've found from that, and then like years later, something else will like, no, that course didn't work because this is what was missing, right? So it's like new things are constantly coming out about what's missing, and these laws of the universe, or these teachings that people are putting out there, because we're constantly changing, because once we get what it is, the game changes. Like, we have to keep constantly growing. And I do like that idea of like, which is what I've something I've said on here before, is I'm not afraid to mess up publicly. Like, you can see my process. I'm gonna be messy. You know, you're seeing whether, you know, when Brian's here, me going on all these little side tangents, having half thoughts, like, and I leave a lot of that stuff in the recordings too, because I don't want to try to present a supposedly complete being out there. I want you to see that it, you know, it is a struggle sometimes. It is, it's hard sometimes. And sometimes I'll just be lying down because I can't sit up for very long. And that's a lot of days right now. Like I said, I feel pretty good this morning. And maybe it's because I had this appointment that I had, you know, with doctors, finally getting the attention that I've been seeking for 5 years, the help that I've been wanting from doctors, and having the experience of being listened to, of them wanting to check things that didn't even occur to me, and not because they're trying to find pre-existing conditions, but because they want to help me out as best as they can. They want to be really thorough. So it's like finally being fed. I just thought, as I'm saying that, I also have the conflicting thought of like, the magic requires the sacrifice of solace. So do I need really that affirmation or whatever it is, that validation from doctors to know that I'm okay and all that? So it's like, there's always these two sides conflicting. And I think for every single subject, we're going to have these two sides. And that's the reason we keep growing, because we keep questioning these things, these truths, these little cliche sayings, or these ancient wisdoms and truths and all of this stuff. We got to keep questioning them. And I just think of like God getting to know himself or themselves, like through us, through all of these questions. It's like, that's why I like that theory of that we had to forget everything. We had to forget that we're God when we came into this world, so that we can have these questions, so that we learn to be God through all of this density.
There's this album on Spotify that I found, and it comes, I think it comes from a movie, but I've done like a meditation with it before and really listened to all of it. And it talks about, it's the rising of the seventh sun or rising of the sixth sun or something like that. But it starts out that in the beginning, the question was, who am I? And I think that was the question that they say that God presented, and then the Great Spirit, or whoever that is. And then I think it's the same question that we came here for, that we can ask ourselves now, who am I? And I think going back to the ideal of Jesus, I love what he says is, I am, I exist. I mean, that's, he just says that I am.
I am that I am.
Yeah. And so I think that's, I mean, can we say the same thing for ourselves, that I am, that I exist, that I am here to be? And then past that, anything past that is just an addition onto myself, things that I've brought into myself that sometimes limit me, but can also expand me. And putting on those, like you said, you want to try anything, like putting on those different hats of, I want to be this right now, or I want to be this. And maybe I'm not that. Maybe I don't want to be this, or maybe I'm going to change what this is 5 minutes from now. And, you know, we just get to experience life. And I think the existence and the experience just go hand in hand.
I do say that, like, I am that. Like, I do try to do that with everything and everyone. It's like, these are all, if I'm one with everything, I'm that as well. I'm this computer. I'm this bed that's been supporting me, even though it squeaks a lot as I toss and turn, but, right? With every little movement, I question sometimes if it's going to keep holding me. And, you know, just like, what, whenever I have a problem with somebody, it's like, well, that's, I'm them. So it's really never a problem with anybody else. It's me projecting something. It's me noticing the thing that I've been irked with, like I said earlier, about the issues that I find with my dad. There are actually issues that I have with myself. There's no problem out there. There's no problem with him being the way he is and expressing himself the way he does. I just don't like when I do those things. Or, you know, there's one thing that, like, never used to be a problem until I lived in an environment where something like that would be a problem. So now that I know it's a problem for somebody else, I've taken it on as, but it's like their problem. It's like, you know, I didn't need to adopt that. I didn't need to make it a problem for myself, but it's also wanting to make it a problem for myself so that I know how to heal it with myself. And it's like, I was also thinking about how I will purposely forget certain things so that I can let myself really be immersed in a problem so that I can understand it, like my physical condition especially. I wondered, did I ask for the brain issues as well so that I could really, really get into the weight of it, the heaviness of it, so that I could have the confusion constantly? I thought of the Neverending Story. You know how Atreyu has to, at some point, like when the nothing is about to consume the entire existence, right? He has to, like, there's this, the windstorm, there's confusion and all this stuff. And it's like, it's symbolic of the opportunity that we have when there is confusion and all this stuff. It's like letting go of all of these things that we're attached to, getting off of your high flying dragon, your luck dragon, losing your amulet, your talisman, all the things that you have relied on, the things outside of you that you think are the reason that you have all this stuff, so that you can go back down, face your shadow, and with just whatever's, with just yourself, right? He just ends up picking up a rock. I thought of the Emerald Tablet, where it's like the mother's, I mean, the father's the sun, the mother's the moon, and the wind carried him in her belly, or in its belly. The earth nursed him. So you've got the dad that you only see in the morning. You've got the mom who's named Moonchild. Atreyu's literally carried around in the wind and dropped onto the earth, and then he penetrates his shadow with a rock that was just happened to be right by him. So you got all four of those elements. So like this, starting to see all the symbology and all this suddenly, because I'm meditating on why don't I let myself be in my own confusion if I know that I can get to nothing through this, right? Because you want to get to nothing, you want to get to that little spark of creation, so that you can create anything without any, like, you're not building on top of a mess. You're not trying to save something. This, like, the shadows are where we put all of the things that we suppress of ourselves. We you know, are the best parts of ourselves are usually hidden in the shadows, because those are the things that we try to suppress, like actually being good, because we're constantly either told we're not good enough or whatever from the environment, the society, whatever it is, all the things that we've had to suppress, all of our magic to hide from ourselves so that we can fit in, right? So it's like, why don't I let myself be? Get to nothing. Be in the fog. Be in the confusion. Let me lose my amulets and all of the things that my luck dragon, everything that I think I need, my magic feather, to actually create something that comes from me. I don't know if I got off my point, but there you have it.
I like that. And I think it's a good ending point of just leaving that question of who are you? Who are you underneath all of the things that you think that you are? And who do you want to be? And I think it's a question that you get to look at throughout your whole life. Maybe you don't, and maybe that's not a question you choose to have in your life. But I think it's a beautiful one. And I think we looked out sources outside of ourselves so much to find out what that is. But I think that's something we can look to our past to find out who we are. We can look at our present, and we can continue to shape the future of who we want to be. And there's no real limitations past the limitations we place on our mind, the limitations that we choose to limit ourselves with. And sometimes those limitations are the source of our freedom, of getting to exist in the way that we want to. So who are you?
Who are you?
We love you guys.
Yeah, we love you. Thank you for coming to the party. The end.
Let the shift hit the fan. Let the shift hit the fan.